as you numb yourself. As you numb yourself, make me forget my name. You make me lose my spirit. In your name, and in your name, and in your name, I will be saved. In your name.
Good afternoon, everybody. Hope everyone's good and well on a November 7th. Another Wednesday, another week down in this semester at Laurier. So for all of you joining me in the Waterloo region who attend Laurier Waterloo, or if you're outside of the Waterloo region just tuning in, everybody welcome to this week's episode of Richard's Ringside Radio. So we're going to try things a little bit differently today. Normally we go through our news first, but I felt like today we could, start with last night's game summaries and then go to the news. No reason, just thinking about mixing things up. Okay. So let's get this started. So, first game on the docket, Columbus Blue Jackets taking on the Dallas Stars. They beat them 4-1. Columbus goals scored by Anthony Duclair, Matthew Nutvara, Nick Foligno, and Ryan Murray. And the lone Dallas goal scored by Jamie Benn. Ben Bishop making 30 saves, Sergei Bobrovsky making 27 saves on 28 shots. So, a good rebound for Bobrovsky, who's been struggling as of late. Hasn't been an easy time for him, but more on that later. next game, Detroit Red Wings in Vancouver taking on the Canucks. Detroit winning it in a shootout, 3-2. Goals for Vancouver scored by Elias Pettersson. First off, what a goal. That was something else. I don't know if you guys watched it. No, it was an insane goal. Sorry, that game was in Detroit, and the previous game was in Columbus. Getting my teams and locations mixed up on this one. But yeah, Vancouver goal scored by Elias Pettersson and Ben Hutton. And the two Detroit goals scored by Justin Applicator and Gustav Nyquist. And Dylan Larkin scored the lone shootout goal to win it for Detroit, who's turning things around. I mean, if you consider a 5-8-2 record turning things around, it's certainly better than the no wins that they had in the first, I think, five games of the season. So taking on the Canucks, who are top of their division at 9-6-1. So we continue to watch Vancouver's success with eagerness. Vancouver's goalie, Jakob Markstrom, made 28 saves last night. Jimmy Howard made, get this, 40 saves on 42 shots. So busy night for Jimmy Howard. The Rangers taking on the Habs in MSG. The Rangers beat them 5-3. I watched this game. I was very disappointed. Montreal had a great start to the game. They came out of the door flying. They scored within like the first minute. Again, off to a great start. But I think that back-to-back, playing in New York, the Islanders the night before, definitely killed them. As the game went on, you could start to see the speed, started losing their legs. So rough one to lose for Montreal, who was up 3-1, and the Rangers storm back and score four straight goals to beat the Habs and to continue their winning streak to four games. New York Rangers, who announced last year who were on a rebuild, now have a 7-7-1 record, which is pretty good so far in the Metro. The Metro is off to a bit of a shaky start to start the season, to say the least. Goal scored by Montreal. Tatar had two. Domi had one. Domi continuing a hot streak, scoring 9 goals so far to start the season, tying his record last year. So Domi could be off to a career year here in Montreal. New York's goal is scored by Chris Kreider, Anthony DeAngelo, Pavel Buchnevich, and I can't remember this guy's name. Nate Pionk, I think he's Pionk. I don't know how to pronounce that. Or sorry, Neil Pionk, who had an amazing goal. He went end to end, and that was an amazing goal. Went end to end, did a few spins, went around Price. It was a great goal, I'll admit. And Zibanejad getting the final goal for the Rangers. Price made 27 saves. Lundqvist beating him out with 31 saves. Lundqvist with one win behind Jacques Plante with 436 for 7th all-time in the NHL for wins amongst goalies. Moving on, the Senators, amidst all their drama, managed to beat the New Jersey Devils 7-3. Yes, you heard me, 7-3. The Devils are actually leading in this game. They're actually up 2-0, and then the Sens just kind of stormed in and had some sort of barrage of goals. So the goals from the Devils, one from Taylor Hall, one from Kyle Palmieri, and one from Travis Zajac. And then the Sens, one from Thomas Chabot, two from Mark Stone, two for Colin White, one for Ryan Dzingel, and one for Magnus Puljujärvi. Corey Schneider made 18 saves before being pulled and replaced by Keith Kincaid, who made 17 saves. Craig Anderson made 30 saves before being pulled for some reason, being replaced by, I'm not familiar with this guy's name, Matt McKenna? Mike McKenna. A lot of new names in the NHL that you'll have to forgive me. I'm not quite familiar with. So a little couple of game notes on that. Mark Stone scored his 100th goal of his career last night. And before the game, Matt Duchene apologized for the Uber video that released when the Sens were criticizing their team. More on that later. The Toronto Maple Leafs taking on the Las Vegas Golden Knights. The Leafs beat the Knights 3-1. Goals for the Leafs, Connor Brown, Mitch Marner, and Nazem Kadri. Golden Knights goal scored by Cody Eakin. Marc-Andre Fleury made 18 saves, while Frederik Andersen made 36. So a busy night there for Freddie. Scary moment there during the game where Eric Halla had to be stretchered off the ice after taking a big hit from Marlowe. Clean hit by Marlowe. Just Halla landed on his leg awkwardly. Looked to be responsive as he was being stretchered off, but not good news for the struggling Vegas Golden Knights, who are off to a bit of a rough season, 6-8-1 to start the season. Meanwhile, Toronto on a two-game winning streak with a 10-5-0 streak this season, coming in pretty tight to Tampa Bay in the race for the Atlantic. Speaking of Tampa Bay, they beat Edmonton last night 5-2. Tampa goal scored by Steven Stamkos, Braden Point, Yanni Gord, and two from Nikita Kucherov. Edmonton's goal scored by Ryan Strome, his first of the year, and Leon Draisaitl. Mikko Koskinen for the Edmonton Oilers made 30 saves. Meanwhile, Andrei Vasilevskiy made 33 saves, including an incredible head stop. That was pretty cool to watch. In that game, actually, Milan Lucic, for those of you who aren't familiar, kind of ran one of the Lightning's rookies, Matthew Joseph, after he took liberty to Chris Russell. So Lucic didn't like any of that. And Lucic went, slashed him, chased him down the ice, blindsided him, not viciously. It wasn't a vicious blindside, but their puck was nowhere in play. Lucic had no intent of playing the puck anyway. And then I think for me, where it starts to get questionable is after he hits him, he gets on top of him and starts punching him. So I guess I'll make a side note here and talk about the Lucic play. I think the hit was fine. Obviously would be an interference call, but I don't think he would have gotten anything else other than that. It was the fact that he was on top of him and punching a guy who, Matthew Joseph isn't going to fight Milan Lucic. There's very few people who are going to fight Milan Lucic. Lucic, you know, trying to stick up for his teammates, and I respect that. But got to pick your players, got to pick your moments. So he will have an in-phone hearing with the league. Does he get suspended? It's a tough call. I think worst case scenario, if he does, I'd say one game. I wouldn't suspend him. I've seen a lot worse go not suspended. I wouldn't suspend him. But if the league decides to, I'm going to call it a one-game suspension. Also, side note, going back to the Habs and Rangers game, Joel Armia leaving that game in the second period with what looked like a knee injury. So he didn't return. Neither did Matt Zuccarello for the New York Rangers. So some injuries going on in that game. The Habs losing another winger in addition to already having Paul Byron out. So we'll see who they put in the lineup to replace Joel Armia. Moving on, the St. Louis Blues beat the Carolina Hurricanes 4-1. Ryan O'Reilly with the hat trick. Robbie Fabry finally scoring, and I think it was 24 months or something crazy like that. Lone goal from Carolina scored by Jacob Slavin. Curtis McElhinney making 16 saves. Chad Johnson making 38 for the Blues. The LA Kings with their new coach, Willie Desjardins, beat the Anaheim Ducks 4-1. Goals scored by LA Dustin Brown, Kyle Clifford, Ilya Kovalchuk, Tyler Toffoli. The lone Anaheim goal scored by Ryan Kessler. John Gibson made 23 saves in the loss. Jack Campbell, in relief of Jonathan Quick being on IR, made 30 saves. So Jack Campbell continuing his hot year so far. So that puts the Kings on a two-game winning streak. Meanwhile, Anaheim dropping to 6-7-3. So Anaheim continuing to struggle without Corey Perry. And finally, the last game for last night, the San Jose Sharks take on the Minnesota Wild, beating them 4-3. San Jose's goal is scored by Marcus Sorensen, Joe Thornton, Antti Sammela, Barclay Goodrow. I've only heard one of those names. Well, Sorensen I've heard of, but I've never heard of Antti Sammela and Barclay Goodrow. So I apologize if I pronounce any names incorrectly. And the Wild's goals scored by Zach Parise, Jared Spurgeon, and Matthew Dumba. Devin Dubnyk making 18 saves in a loss. Martin Jones making 23. So the Sharks improved to 8-4-3 on a two-game winning streak, which is pretty good. That division continues to impress, but the Vegas Golden Knights still lagging behind. I don't want to say I called it. It's a little early to be saying I called it, but we'll have to watch that. I'll just give a quick update on the standings, division-wise. So, Tampa Bay leads the Atlantic with 23 points. Toronto hot on its trail with 20 points. Boston and Montreal tied for third in the division. However, Boston does now have a game in hand as Montreal lost last night. Montreal could have caught the Maple Leafs last night, but again, fatigue set in. Buffalo not too far behind Montreal, only 2 points back. Ottawa, again, only 3 points back of Montreal and Boston. So it's still pretty close there in the Atlantic, only a few points of separation. And then there's Detroit and Florida, who, yikes. Florida, keep in mind, only played 11 games, but still only with 9 points. Moving to the Metro, the New York Islanders surprisingly leading the division by a point. And again, surprisingly, the Columbus Blue Jackets second in that division. I didn't predict either of these teams to be doing as well as they were. As they are, the Islanders not struggling without John Tavares, who could have seen that coming, and the Columbus Blue Jackets doing as well as they are, I didn't predict them to make the playoffs this year. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs next year because of some losses, but again, we'll talk about that later. Pittsburgh and Washington tied right now, both having a 6-4-3 record for 15 points, so they're tied. Philadelphia also tied. That's actually a four-way tie right there. Philadelphia, Washington, Pittsburgh and New York all tied for third in the Metro with 15 points. Philly and New York making a surprise. Carolina dropping off after their surprising start to the season. Bottom of the division, 1 point ahead in New Jersey for second last. But it's still a pretty tight race. There's not that much of a separation. New Jersey, again, bottom of the division, rough start to the season. Moving to the West. Starting in the Central Division, Nashville leading that division with 22 points for second best in the league. Minnesota not too far behind with 18 points for second. Winnipeg with 17. Colorado also with 17. And Dallas also with 17. So a three-way tie there for third place in the Central. Chicago struggling just a bit. And St. Louis also struggling. Again, that Central Division is pretty tough. So hard to come by points when you play within your division there. But St. Louis and Chicago need to turn their seasons around early. Moving to the Pacific, San Jose and Calgary and Vancouver all tied for first place. Vancouver playing one more game than San Jose and Calgary so far. So naturally, San Jose and Calgary with a game ahead stand a better chance of being a bit higher. Edmonton not too far behind with 17 points. Anaheim falling a little bit behind after a few losses. Arizona, not doing too bad, I guess, in comparison to Anaheim. And Arizona has 3 games in hand against Anaheim. Vegas, struggling, and Los Angeles, bottom of that division with 11 points. That's a rough one to take. If we look, I'd like to look at conferences. Yes. Okay. So, Detroit and Florida, the bottom two teams in the East, and Vegas and LA, bottom of the conference, is the Western Conference. So, that's not really surprising that Detroit and Florida, bottom of the conference, but Vegas and LA, these are two teams that made the playoffs last year, one going to the conference, the Stanley Cup Finals. Very surprising. Okay. Let's go back to our news. Okay, we're going to save some of our bigger topics of discussion for later. We're just going to fly through what's just going around in the league right now. So the Edmonton Oilers sent their first-round pick this year, Evan Bouchard, back to the minors. Slava Voynov, if anyone remembers Slava Voynov, he was a defenseman for the LA Kings, but got kicked out of the league and had his contract terminated after he pleaded guilty. I think it was for assault charges. Domestic, I believe it was. But he's applying for reinstatement into the NHL, so that'll have to go through an appeal board. I guess we'll watch that situation. Brady Tkachuk and Austin Matthews have been practicing. Tkachuk is nearing a return with the Sens. The Tampa Bay Lightning signing Yanni Gord to a 6-year, $31 million contract with a 5.2 AAV. So if you don't know what AAV means, that's basically meaning what he'll make per year. So Yanni Gord making 5.2 a year. He had 64 points last year. I think it's a little too much for Yanni Gord. Just my opinion. I'd say maybe 4.5. I mean, it seems like nickels and dimes, but in the salary cap era, $700,000 could be a big difference. So I think it's a little too much for Yanni Gord, especially with the cap, like how much cap space Tampa Bay has and how much they're going to have to think about next year with Braden Point and other guys, especially Mikhail Sergachev is coming up as well. So a lot of big decisions to be made out there in Tampa Bay. So going way across the ocean, we're talking about the Finnish series now. This is going back a while ago. But again, I informed you guys last week that this news is covered Wednesday to Wednesday. So whatever happened, even if it's today being last week, it's on this list. So the Finnish series split one game for the Jets and one game for the Panthers. Although in the one game that the Jets won, Finnish star Patrick Laine had a hat trick for his home crowd, so good for Laine on that one. Speaking about stars, Elias Pettersson off to a great start to this season. A lot of people saying he's the most exciting Canuck to watch since Pavel Bure. Haven't been able to watch a lot of Pettersson other than his highlights, so I don't know what his overall game is like, but his highlights do not disappoint. Veteran goalie Pekka Rinne signed a 2-year, $10 million contract, so if my math is right, that's $5 million a year for the Vets. I think that's a very solid contract. 2 years, I believe he's 36. A 2-year deal's pretty good. Five mil is pretty low risk for a goalie. Rinne is continuing his success. He's off to another great start this year, won the Vezina last year, so I think he'll do okay. Eric Staal scored his 500th career goal in a Minnesota victory the other day. Jonathan Tay scored his 300th career goal. So just a couple milestones around the league. Moving on to some less exciting news. The LA Kings fired their coach, Mr. John Stevens, after a 4-8-1 start to the season. And Willie Desjardins is named the interim coach. And as I mentioned earlier, Willie Desjardins won his season debut with the Kings last night in a 4-1 win against Anaheim. Speaking about coaching firings, this one, naturally, a lot more surprising. The Blackhawks fired Joe Quenneville after a 6-6-3 start. So Jeremy Colleton is named the coach of the Chicago Blackhawks, and he is the youngest active coach in the league right now at age 33. So there are four players on Chicago that are actually older than their head coach, which I don't know. It seems kind of weird to me. But Joel Quenneville, second all-time in wins amongst coaches, only behind the great Scotty Bowman. So that's, I don't know, it's a pretty big loss for the Blackhawks. I mean, obviously you want to mix things up because things aren't going your way right now. I don't know if firing Quenneville is the right choice, but what do you do, right? Like, you need something to spark your players. I just don't know if firing a coach of that caliber is necessarily the right thing to do, but I guess we'll find out. Again, how else do you spark a team other than, hey, this is our championship coach, and we fired him because whatever he's doing isn't good enough, so you players need to step it up as well. So now that Quenneville's hit the market, there's some pretty good names for coaches on the market right now. Two that come to mind immediately: Alain Vigneault, and of course, Joel Quenneville. So St. Louis, maybe a coaching change out there. Maybe Detroit, Jason Botterill is his, I would imagine. I don't know. I would say probably more St. Louis, strictly because they have a better team and success would be, like, expected. Meanwhile, Detroit with Jason Botterill doesn't really have a lot to work with out there. So I would say that firing Jason Botterill wouldn't really be fair because he's not working with much. Meanwhile, Mike Yeo is working with guys like Tarasenko, Petrangelo, Shen, you know, Bomeister, you name it. You know, there's tons of guys out there in St. Louis. Ryan O'Reilly's out there now, so there's not really an excuse for them to be where they're at. They got good goaltending in Jake Allen, and they're a team that's just shutting down from the inside. So I don't know if Quenneville would rush back in that quickly. The only time I've seen that was a few years ago, where Montreal fired Michel Therrien and hired Claude Julien in like the span of a few months after Julien had been fired. But I mean, his career speaks for itself. He's second all time in wins amongst coaches. He's got 3 Stanley Cups. But then again, Alain Vigneault is also a pretty solid coach. If Quenneville's not ready to sign anywhere, Vigneault going to the conference finals with the Vancouver Canucks in 2011 and the New York Rangers in 2014. So some good experience there with Vigneault. Okay. Moving on, Winnipeg forward Brendan Lemieux is suspended 2 games for his hit to the head of Vincent Trocheck. I watched the hit. No bueno. That's not really an excuse. Gun to fight after. Brendan Lemieux may be following in the footsteps of his dad. A little bit of a questionable hit there on Trocheck, so I think his suspension was warranted. 2 games, not too bad. Brian Boyle scoring a hat trick on Hockey Fights Cancer Night, and if this guy isn't a great ambassador for that, I don't know who is. I mean, first off, he was diagnosed with cancer. Beat it. Had an incredible year last year coming back from that. And then to score hat trick, his first career hat trick on Hockey Fights Cancer Night, you can't write a better storyline for Brian Boyle. I mean, the guy, it's an amazing story. A less great story is the Ottawa Senators. The dumpster fire that continues to burn out in Ottawa at the Canadian Tire Center. I mean, there's just so many issues with the Ottawa Senators. It's bad. Like, it is very bad. It just seems to get worse and worse. I thought for sure once they got rid of Carlson and Hoffman that, like, a lot of that animosity was gone. They'd start turning the ship around and they'd start the rebuild. But now it's just getting worse. I think we're going to go on break. But after the break, we're going to talk about all of Ottawa's shenanigans that have occurred in the last couple of months. We'll talk about that. One quick thing, we'll give one more piece of news before. We have 2 topics of discussions after the break. We're going to be talking about Sergei Bobrovsky and how he's a UFA at the end of the year and whether or not Columbus is going to trade him. And we're also going to talk about the Senators and their fiasco and dilemmas and all their nonsense. But one quick thing before we hit the break is the LA Kings hired Hall of Famer Adam Oates as a consultant, hoping that can help their situation right now. So we are going to go to break. Things are just playing. All right. Here is Living on the Edge by Aerosmith. Enjoy. That was Cocaine by Eric Clapton. Great song. Quite the guitar player is Eric Clapton. Just an update on the Milan Lucic situation. So Lucic is fined $10,000, no suspension. So that's the maximum suspension allowable under the CBA. $10,000, Milan Lucic. Anywho, like we were saying before, actually, one thing I want to say before I forget. I was flying through some of the old draft... some of the old draft information, just going back years and years and years and stuff to see, you know, where my team, Montreal Canadiens, picked and who they missed and so on and so forth. So I stumbled upon the 2010 NHL draft. This was the draft where Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin were drafted. So it just happened to be scanning through the first round and, you know, you see Vladimir Tarasenko, 16 overall. Montreal, their pick at 22nd overall, Jared Tenorti. And when you go down a couple picks at 26 overall, Washington selected Evgeny Kuznetsov. And when I read that, I buried my head in my hands and sobbed for a few minutes because Evgeny Kuznetsov could have been so good for Montreal. He would solve our center situation. I honestly feel like if we would have had a guy like Kuznetsov, we probably would have won the cup by now. I mean, just think to that year that we made it to the conference finals against the Rangers. You slide in a guy like Evgeny Kuznetsov. I don't think he was playing in the NHL around that time. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we wouldn't have won the Stanley Cup However, we'd be better off right now than we are where we are now. And to miss a guy like Evgeny Kuznetsov by 4 picks, somebody we could have picked, but instead decided to pick Jared Tenorti, a guy who's ironically playing in Arizona, which we got the pick from, is just sad. Because now we're struggling with centermen and all that, and Evgeny Kuznetsov is one of the premier centermen of the league right now, fresh off of a Stanley Cup. And that just hurts, you know, it holds a special place. There was another surprising pick. Goudreau was picked really late. I think that might have been it. But there was another pick that I found was rather surprising. That was super late in that Montreal almost getting David Pastrnak a few years ago, but missing him by 1 pick. But who knows? Maybe we wouldn't have picked him. Oh, there was the draft where we picked P.K. Subban and Ryan McDonagh in the same draft, which would have been amazing. We would have had P.K. Just imagine that defensive pairing. P.K. Subban and Ryan McDonagh. You have P.K., who's an offensive defenseman. You got Ryan McDonagh, who's one of the better defensive defensemen in the league. Imagine that D pairing. But instead, we trade away P.K. We trade away Ryan McDonagh, and here we are. Simple things, man. Simple things. If just imagine how different Montreal's roster would look if we had Ryan McDonagh, P.K. Subban, and Evgeny Kuznetsov all on one team. Granted, I don't think we could because the cap, we would have to surround them with just the bare bones of players. But, you know, what could have been? Even if we did and we had to trade one of those players, the sort of return we would get would have been incredible. But whatever, I'm over it. Ha 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 ha. Yes, the Senators. Okay, so yeah, first we're going to go back all the way to December 15th, 2017. This is when the team owner, Eugene Melnyk, criticized the fans for their support and threatened to move the team if the attendance didn't improve. So I would argue that it's because the Senators decided to build their arena outside of the city, whereas I believe it's the Scotiabank Scotiabank Arena, not the Leaf, like where the Leafs play now, but a Scotiabank Place, or I think, or something like that, was in the middle of the city. A lot more traffic, a lot more easier to get to. Tickets would obviously be easy to buy. Now the Canadian Tire Center is outside of the city. It's just more difficult for people to get to. Naturally, attendance is going to dip. But Melnyk didn't like that and threatened to move the team, and fans obviously did not like that. February 9th, 2018, the Senators parted ways with their team president, Tom Anselmi. So that's a big shaker in confidence. And then in March 19th, 2018, 4 billboards go up with hashtag Melnyk out, go up all across Ottawa. If that's not proof of a shake in confidence in management, then I don't know what it is. April 7, 2018, the Sens finished bottom of the league, second last, right after a year in which they reached Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. Scary. And then May 30th, 2018, on the eve of the NHL draft, the Senators assistant GM Randy Lee is charged with second degree harassment at the draft, ironic, at the pre-draft combine. So he stepped down. He suspended in June and stepped down in August. Again, management shaky. And then it just seemed like dominoes after that. On June 12, 2018, the whole Erik Karlsson and his wife, Melinda Karlsson, they filed an order of protection against the girlfriend of Mike Hoffman, Mike Hoffman's girlfriend. That was the whole online bullying thing in which, like, Mona Carrick, who's Mike Hoffman's girlfriend, posted hundreds of messages and posts online saying that, like, oh, you know, just, like, talking a whole bunch of smack about, like, their undead, their dead child who died, like the child who was stillborn, I believe it was. And then there was tons of allegations of Monica Carrick, like, saying just awful things, wishing that, you know, that the child would have died, and like that somebody should break Eric's knees. Real tension in the Sens organization at that moment, and the tension was palpable, and you could just sense that there was going to be some big changes coming. And then 7 days later, a big change did come. The Sens traded Hoffman to the San Jose Sharks, and then the Sharks immediately traded him to Florida. So Ottawa shipping out one of their top snipers for not really that much, just to try and remedy that situation. And then on September 13th, probably the biggest of all of these issues, they trade their franchise player. September 13, 2018, they trade Erik Karlsson to the San Jose Sharks for not a lot. Not a lot of return there on Erik Karlsson.
It's very difficult to trade away arguably your franchise's best player. I mean, if you look back on some of the best players in Sens history, immediately who comes to mind for me, Daniel Alfredsson, Danny Heatley, Jason Spezza, Erik Karlsson. It's got to be in the conversation. He's a two-time Norris Trophy winner, leads the team in points almost every year, carries that team. And then you trade him for not a lot of return. That's not something encouraging for a fan base when you trade away the one of the best players that the franchise has ever seen. So, rough on that mark. And again, you'd think after all that stuff with Karlsson and Hoffman, and you'd think that once both of those players are gone, all the drama would end and they can just focus on a rebuild. No. Just days ago, an Uber video, a video from an Uber ride with a bunch of senators, is released of seven Ottawa senators just talking absolute smack about their penalty kill. They're mocking their coach, their assistant coach. They're talking smack about the team. And that doesn't look good. I mean, yes, there's all the talk about how it shouldn't have been released. It's a breach of privacy, that, and this. But still, it's fine for these guys to talk about it, but these are professionals. Like, they need to know where they are, what they're talking about, and who's listening. And, you know, like, this is all stuff that needs to be known, and just really unprofessional by a lot of these guys, and a couple of vets too. Like, Chris Weidman was there, and Matt Duchene. Matt Duchene's a long time NHL player, so he should know this. Guys like Thomas Chabot and Alex Formanton. These are just kids, right? Like that'll happen. But for the vets to be saying stuff like that surprises me. So, again, just continuing. And the season's barely just started, so we'll have to see. And to continue on to all that, they don't even have a first-round pick this year. So, honestly, things are just going to get worse for the Senators. Don't know where they go from here. We will watch to see what sort of more drama comes out, because honestly, it's good news. It's easy to report. Anyway, moving on from that, we are now going to be talking about our last point of discussion here within our last 13 minutes. We are going to be talking about Sergei Bobrovsky and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, we already know that Columbus has a few issues with Artem Panarin, who is not talking contract extensions right now, but Bobrovsky already kind of stating at the beginning of training camp that he kind of doesn't want to sign back with the Blue Jackets. So, question is, if you're the Blue Jackets, do you hang on to him for a cup run? And do you hope that your roster is good enough to make a cup run that you're willing to hang on to Bobrovsky and risk losing him for nothing just to have a crack at the cup? And do you try and risk signing him in the offseason with knowing that he may not re-sign and you'll lose him for nothing, like John Tavares? Or do you trade him at the deadline and hope for the best? If I'm honest, I think that the Islanders should have done something like that, because at least they could have got some return for Tavares instead of losing him for nothing. I guess they really held out hope that he could re-sign somewhere with them, obviously. But I imagine the Columbus Blue Jackets want to avoid losing a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky's caliber for nothing. So do they deal him? I think yes. I think it's a good idea to, if he's not going to re-sign, I think it's good to trade him away and get something back. I mean, let's be honest, Columbus, they're okay, but they're in a tough division, they're in a tough conference, and with the roster they have, I can't really see them making too big of a crack at the Stanley Cup. They got eliminated last year pretty early in the first round, so I don't really see them making too big of a splash in the playoffs. I don't think it's worth it to risk losing Bobrovsky for nothing, just for pride or whatever. So, especially since, Korpisalo, their backup goalie, is young, he's talented, and I think he could take over as starter for the Blue Jackets. So I don't think it would be too bad. It would be demoralizing for fans and the team, losing somebody like Bobrovsky. But it's the nature of the game. It's a business, you know? So we're going to be looking at teams that could take Sergei Bobrovsky, guys that need somebody like Bobrovsky. Well, I guess we could do it in two situations, one being who could use him for a playoff run and who could use him to sign if he goes to free agency. So guys who could, like, it's tough because it's so early in the season that it's hard to to see who's going to be making that much of a run. I'm actually, you know, I'm not going to do the whole if so-and-so goes on a run because it's too early in the season to call that. So a lot of things can change. So we're just going to focus on who could use him just in general. So I've picked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams. And these are the 6 teams that I've picked that could use a guy like Bobrovsky and who could really improve, that could really improve their roster. So first we're going to go with Edmonton. As the Oilers having what was great goaltending a few years ago. Not even that far back. I mean, we're talking like 2 years ago. But Cam Talbot really just falling off as of late. So right now their tandem is Mikko Koskinen and Cam Talbot. So the Oilers, I mean, not great chances of getting Bobrovsky because obviously Talbot carries quite a cap chunk with his contract. But I feel like if he can't pick up his play, maybe Bobrovsky brings Edmonton to the next level. It's a tough one. Edmonton, probably not the most likely of all my picks. But I just looking, and I thought I'd toss him in there because they're struggling with goaltending. They have been for the past year and a half. So I think Bobrovsky would bring them to the next level. I think they still need to try and get some scoring past the first line. But definitely goaltending, I think, would help. Next, we're going to go to the Detroit Red Wings. Now, Detroit's got 2 vets in net with Jonathan Bernier and Jimmy Howard. Jimmy Howard obviously getting most of the starts. So I would suggest that if Howard goes to free agency or they trade him away or he retires or anything like that, he's only 35. Wait, no, he is, what, 34? Yeah, 34. So he won't retire anytime soon. But if he decides to leave to go to a contending team and there's space, then Bobrovsky could sign with the Red Wings. But a couple problems with that. One, does Bobrovsky want to go to a team like Detroit that is just abysmal right now? Like, does he want to go from Columbus, a team that, you know, is okay, they're on the bubble, but they tend to make the playoffs, to a rebuild in Detroit? I don't know. I certainly wouldn't want to, but if the money's there, then I guess it's an option, but that's the thing. Detroit is stricken for cap space right now. I mean, just looking at where they're at, they only have just under $2.5 million in cap space. So they don't have a lot of cap space for some reason. So unless they move some of that, they can't afford Bobrovsky. But I think Bobrovsky would have a starting role in this team. But the question is that will Detroit make enough cap space to accommodate a contract like Bobrovsky would get? And would Bobrovsky want to sign with a rebuilding team? Next, the Carolina Hurricanes. They have the cap space, but the thing is that they just have so many goalies. So many goalies that are almost there. Bobrovsky, I think, would take Carolina to another level. He's going to take any team to another level. He's just that good. 2-time Vezina winner. But they already got guys like Scott Darling, Curtis McElhinney, and Peter Mrazek. Right? I think Mrazek could be a starter, perhaps, in his own right. Darling, and again, could be a starter. You got Mrazek and Darling. Darling, who was a backup in Chicago, and Mrazek, who was like sharing starts with Detroit with Howard, and McElhinney, who was a backup in Detroit. So they have 3 goalies who are taking up a lot of cap space, mainly Darling. Well, actually, they're not grasping too much. Mrazek, I think, sounds pretty short, small deal. McElhinney, not getting too much. Darling, I think, is the most at like maybe 3.5 or something like that. So there is cap space. It's just a matter of moving these goalies. And would Bobrovsky want to go into a team like Carolina, whose future is a little uncertain with their ownership and with their success? I wouldn't rule it out if the money's there. I'd say it's a little more likely than Detroit. Moving on, we're talking about the Ottawa Senators. Craig Anderson's great, right? But he's getting a little old. He's how, what, 36? 37, okay. So, that's a tough one. You know, do they trade Anderson, or do they keep him maybe as a backup? A little bit expensive for a backup. How much cap space does Ottawa have? They have $7.8 million in cap space. Not too bad, but then they have Stone's contract to take consideration and Duchesne, so it's going to get tight out there in Ottawa. So money might be a problem. And does Bobrovsky want to go to, again, another rebuilding team? And does he want to go to a team with so many issues and drama as the Ottawa Senators? I certainly wouldn't. But again, a lot of guys, if the money's right, they're willing to go anywhere. But it's a matter of whether or not they can find the money if Bobrovsky wants to go to a team with so many issues and go to a team within a rebuild. So that's another scenario. So another second last pick for where Bobrovsky could land is the New York Islanders. Now, the Islanders, just questionable goalie tandem. They're doing pretty good right now. But it's only a matter of time until, you know, we'll see how that holds out. Right now, they got Thomas Greiss and Robin Lehner in net. Lehner's on a one-year deal. So do the Islanders look to upgrade with somebody like Bobrovsky, you know? Then that's, you know, that's an option. Let's see if they have the cap space. They got $13 million. Closer to $14 million. So that's not too bad. It's an option. I think that's probably not a bad situation for Bobrovsky to end up. It's a team that's, you know, not doing too bad right now. We'll have to see where they're at further on in the season. But, you know, it's a team with a pretty good roster and good prospects and with cap space. So, you know, Bobrovsky could land there. There's also the option of Bobrovsky re-signing with Columbus. That's also an option, but... you know, we're speaking the hypothetical right now. Another option, which I didn't think about earlier, but there's the possibility he could go back to Philadelphia, the team that drafted him. The big thing, though, is that the Philadelphia already has Brian Elliott. I don't know if you want to be wasting the amount of money you are on Brian Elliott just to blow on Bobrovsky. Now, they do have $10 million cap space, but they also have guys to sign back. But I suppose Philly could be an option. But this, for me, is probably would be my pick. For the most likely of teams, assuming their success continues, is the Vancouver Canucks. So the Canucks are like they're about around top of their division. They're still struggling with goaltending. So right now they've got Jakob Markstrom, Anders Nielsen, Thatcher Demko, all these guys. You know, Demko's a good prospect, but I don't think he's ready for a full-time starter role. Markstrom he's iffy. He's never really been consistent. Anders Nielsen, again, never really been consistent. And this is a good Vancouver group. You know, they've got some talent. Their defense isn't too bad. They got guys like Branson and Edler and Tanev, Houghton. You know, they're not too bad. And then their offense is pretty good. They've got a good mix of vets and rookies who all know how to play the puck. They have cap space. Let's see how much cap space they do have. Get you guys an actual number. So the Canucks have $8 million in cap space. It's not a whole lot, but goalies don't command too big of contracts, although Bobrovsky will probably be in for a big payday. So if the Canucks do have the cap space, if they're maybe willing to move some contracts and their success continues, I think Bobrovsky would be great in Vancouver. I mean, he would have no problem being a starting role. I think having either Markstrom or Nielsen or Demko as backups would be solid. Again, a very good, fast, young team that's just itching to get back in the playoffs. And again, if they can continue their success this year and go to the table with a good amount of money for Bobrovsky, I can't really see why he would turn it down. I mean, if they make the playoffs this year and they have a good, you know, a good season, Bobrovsky, you know, he would bring that team to a whole nother level. As again, we keep saying. So I think that Vancouver would be a great place for him to land. Question is, would he want to go from a relatively quiet market in Columbus to Vancouver, where he'd be under the microscope as it's a Canadian market? So, you know, again, there's a lot of considerations to take. But, you know, there's options for Bobrovsky. I would recommend, if it's for sure that Columbus can't re-sign him, I would recommend trading him away just to get some return. Again, Vancouver is a team that's just rifled with prospects, so it's not as if they can't part ways with guys. So yeah, I think that would be a good place. That was my first pick. Anyway, that is it for today's episode, guys. I think we covered a lot, got a lot of good discussion prospects. I'm glad I decided to talk about the Sens and Bobrovsky because I was kind of nervous because I didn't think I had a lot of topics of discussion today. I looked at my notes and it just was all numbers and scores. So glad we got to talk about some stuff. Anyway, that is it for today's episode of Richard's Ringside Radio. I'm glad you all showed up. Thank you for all showing up. I hope you guys all enjoyed. Remember to tweet at me at RinkRichard on Twitter if there's any topics you guys want me to talk about, anything you want me to cover, any issues you have, or anything, really. Again, that is it. I hope you all enjoyed. Thank you all for tuning in. And I will see you all next week. I've been your host, Andrew Richard, and I hope you all have a great day.